Welcome to MCAR Radio 7.11. We are locked and loaded for the Ohio State game this weekend, in which we anticipate
a win, a huge win, a great victory for University of Michigan. Hail to the victors, valiant! It's not working with you guys at all.
You guys, like, we've talked all year about not loosying it up here. It's like Lucy.
All right, we're going for twice in a row, right?
Let's pull a Band-Aid off here. Let's just talk about the Ohio State offense.
No!
Which 10 out of 11 players got stars on the chart that Seth puts together, which has never happened before. And as soon as everybody saw that, the Slack lit up with accusations that by not giving Jeremy Ruckert a star, we were dooming ourselves to a 200-yard performance from him. That is sort of like zeitgeist.
In fairness,
MGO blog Slack,
he is like the 18th tight end according to PFF in the Big Ten. Like we faced Otten when he was still before he was injured. Like he was supposed to be one of the best in the country. We got Nebraska's guy; he was pretty good. Ferguson.
Why are we talking about Jeremy Ruckert? We don't need to talk about Jeremy Ruckert. This is not
because I want to stay on Jeremy Ruckert just a little bit longer before getting to literally any other position on Ohio State's offense. Let's talk about how Jeremy Ruckert. We're going to be fine against Jeremy Ruckert.
All right. Well, so I guess we'll start with Trevion Henderson, 5-star freshman, averaging 7.2 yards a carry. Primary backup averaging 7.3 yards a carry. And then there's the guy who sucks, averaging 5.8 yards a carry. Not good. And, you know, if you look at the personnel matchups here, I don't really see how Michigan is going to stop this running attack without adding extra guys to the box, which I don't think they want to do because the defensive tackles have been okay this year, but when they've really kind of come up against the high end, which they haven't really because there's not a whole lot of good rushing attacks in the league this year, they have not made plays against single blocking. And so you get the wrecker stuff where they're just attacking those guys with the inverted veer that goes a little bit further inside. You get Penn State, who can't run the ball at all this year, and they have a respectable running game against Michigan, largely because Michigan is focusing their firepower on Jahan Dotson. And, okay, it's one thing when Penn State's going for 4.4 yards a carry, and you're like, that's something we can live with. This rushing attack, if you don't add numbers to the box, they're going to get you.
Yeah, I mean, Trevion Henderson is a great player. You know, he's just kind of a repeat of J.K. Dobbins, right, in terms of anything can be a home run. All he needs is a hole. He can make a move and then put the Jets on, and he's gone. Just an electric, electric player. And if you're Michigan, it's like with the wide receivers, too. You just don't want to give up the 40-yarder, right? Even if he runs at 6 yards per carry on a standard, you know, downs, if it's just six every time, it's not good. But you have the chance to still get off the field once you get in the red zone and things change a little bit. You just can't give up the 55-yarder or the 60-yarder where he breaks it free. And he can absolutely do that in the blink of an eye.
Well, if you look at a lot of his long runs, he doesn't really have to do a whole lot of work.
Nope.
Like, there's just a crack in the line, and it's like, all right, now I can run fast in a straight line, and he does that very well. I think he's working in an extremely target-rich environment for running backs who want to average 7 yards carries. So there's some possibility that if Michigan is able to bottle him up, he won't look quite as good. Penn State did that for a while. He broke one big one, but other than that, they kind of kept him contained.
And that was shocking, by the way, because that was a week after Illinois just ran it right up the middle 55 times and won the football game. So that kind of came out of nowhere, but they did a really good job against Henderson.
So I'm not saying that like this can't happen, but the personnel here doesn't really fill me with warm fuzzies because you got Josh Ross, who I think is pretty good in that second linebacker spot. Been a lot of mistakes this year, and this is a kind of team where if one of your linebackers is in the wrong gap and he doesn't fit it right, it's 6 points.
I mean Ohio State's offensive line, they're not like built for run blocking. Like Luke Weipler is legit. I think he's a very good player and probably one of the most underrated guys in the Big Ten because he's a redshirt freshman and no one really paid attention to him until this year. But the rest of the guys there, Munford is a converted tackle, Paris Johnson's a converted tackle, and the you know, then they have two guys who are like NFL tackles, but they're pass protectors. The reason why Ohio State's rushing game is so dangerous is like the passing game, right? Like you have to lead two guys back at all times, and like you're all, you know, you're usually bracketing guys, you're usually playing man on the outside and then giving those guys help, and your front has to do all the work. Penn State, what do they have? A really good front seven. When Illinois and Michigan ran on Penn State, both of them got down to the safeties and like, you know, stacked the box and started running against them. That's not really going to happen against Ohio State. Like they're going to spread it out and they're going to make you play, you know, your guys on their guys. And even if they're not great run blockers, you know, like you said, they're going to crack some. There's going to be gaps, and when there is, that's when they get all their yards because the safeties are not going to be part of the run game.
One thing I want to throw out here on the run game topic is that the quarterback running component of the Ohio State offense that was once so prominent under JT Barrett and quarterbacks before him is basically gone from the offense. I mean, this will set us up to move into the passing attack, but Stroud really doesn't run it at all. He's got, I think, only 25 carries on the year, including sacks. So we're talking maybe one like positive rushing play a week from Stroud, and that's normally like a scramble. I mean, they do not run some of the stuff they used to with Barrett and even with Fields, who was a more competent runner. Stroud is much more Dwayne Haskins. But as I pointed out in my piece, the first play from scrimmage in the 2018 game for Ohio State against Michigan was a Haskins run, which was not in the scouting report at all. So it's probably coming at some point in this kind of matchup, but it isn't something you have to be really mindful of the way it was in years past.
Yeah, I mean, this is a game where you pull out all the stops if you got him, and Stroud is mobile enough to hurt you. He's not, I mean, I think he's better than Haskins in that regard, right? Haskins just didn't want to run, and I think CJ Stroud doesn't have to.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's just, why would you need to run the ball when you could just throw it for 10 yards and attempt? And so you get Chris Olave, you have Garrett Wilson, and then Jackson,
Smith the Jigba. They call him Ninja.
Smith and
Njigba.
Njigba. Njigba, yeah. Ninja.
Ninja. JSN. So the good news is if you can bottle up those three guys, they don't really get a lot from Jeremy Ruckert.
Yeah. I mean, these three guys are unreal. They're all going to be first-round picks. There's definitely a case that we could look back and say this wide receiver group was better than LSU's when they had Joe Burrow, which is a steep thing to say given what Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson are doing in the NFL right now, but this is a special group of wide receivers, and you still have the deep threats, Olave and Wilson, that we saw 2 years ago, but they added another piece who really brings it all together, because if you spread your DBs out and you put two safeties deep to protect against Wilson and Olave, you leave this space over the middle, and Smith and Jigba is just unreal in that range, because he's one of the only guys in the country that can run a 6-yard comebacks route, have three tacklers around him, and take it 70 yards to the house. I saw him do that multiple times. I mean, he makes regular plays home runs, and the shiftiness, the agility to then just turn on and go 0 to 60 in an instant, that's what makes him so dangerous. And so tackling against him in particular is paramount. You know, if you can hold him to those 8-yard completions, that is great, because what he does is he turns the 8-yard completion into a 50-yard completion.
Yeah, they're fourth in the country in sack rate allowed. So if Michigan is able to win this game, it's going to be because Hutchinson and Ojabo are going to be able to beat the tackles on a consistent basis. It's got to look like the Penn State game against tackles who are significantly better than Penn State tackles. What is Mike McDonald going to do in this game? I mean, I think the corner blitz where Gray got a sack and they dropped off a couple of defensive linemen to fill in holes in the zone, I think that's going to be a big part of the game plan, because if you're just giving Stroud looks and you're running what he's expecting you to run, you're not going to handle what's going on at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right? I mean, you have to get pressure on Stroud. I saw this number that Brady Quinn had in a thing I was reading yesterday. I don't know how legit it is, but it was like a massive gap, something like 75% completion for Stroud in a clean pocket versus barely over 50 in a pressured pocket. And that shows up on the tape where he, you know, if I were an NFL scout, I would be a little sort of worried about Stroud as an NFL prospect long-term, because we never see him under pressure. And when he is, it doesn't look great, but it happens like once a week against most normal teams. So from an NFL standpoint, it's a little bit of a mystery, but this is the matchup everyone at the Big House who has an NFL credential is going to be watching. It's Nicholas Petit-Frere and DeJuan Jones against Ojabo and Hutchinson. Those are all day one, day two prospects, elite pass rushers on elite offensive tackles. And it's the one place in this game that Michigan could out-talent Ohio State, and they need to. Because if you can do that on a consistent basis, you can force Stroud into mistakes. You know, in the Penn State game I watched, he had a play where he had Wilson and Olave wide open down the field for touchdowns, and he puts it between the two because he had pressure. Like, that's, you're not going to cover those guys every play or most plays. You're going to need Stroud to miss and make mistakes, and the only way he does it is when he faces pressure.
Yeah, in that Penn State game, they held Ohio State to, I think, 26 points on offense.
Yep.
And if Michigan's able to do that, they can win that game.
If you told me Michigan holds Ohio State to 30, I think Michigan wins the game. I just don't think that's happening.
Well, so, I mean, the thing is that Penn State has kind of a similar setup where they have two very good defensive ends. And when Ross Fulton went back and he sort of broke down that game, what was happening was that Penn State got in their heads a little bit, and Ohio State was a little bit rattled. And so their offensive line wasn't performing at the level that they expect to, even against the defensive tackles for Penn State, who are not great. So like, there is some possibility that if Michigan's able to, you know, have some wins early in this game, that Ohio State kind of is like, this doesn't happen to us, you know? Like, we are rampant, and when things kind of get off kilter, they can be off kilter for extended periods of time before their talent kind of reasserts itself.
I mean, this game plan was not written this week. This game plan was part of the interview when Mike McDonald talked to Harbaugh. It was okay, what are you going to do against these guys? And this is what I wrote my Halo Victors article on, was the Ravens defense was really was best against young quarterbacks. Like, every time they faced the Browns, they would just destroy them. And then, like, they'd get, you know, hosed by the Saints. Because quarterbacks have been in the NFL for a long time, figure out what they're doing, right? Like, they're going to drop guys into weird spots. They're going to have the wrong person covered. You remember the Wisconsin game and some of the blitzes we had there, where, like, you know, he makes read number one. That guy's covered, goes to read number two, doesn't even get to, like, see where read two is before the blitz is on him. Guessing where that first read is going to be and having that covered by someone he wasn't expecting, and then he's out of time. That's how you're going to win this game. And that was the entire philosophy. That's why we switched defensive coordinators in the first place, was to make sure that when Ohio State's quarterback drops back, he doesn't know what the heck he's looking at. And the last few games, like, I'm not going to look at the Maryland game tape and be okay, that's what Michigan's defense is going to run, right? This is the proving point for that whole concept. And we've seen glimpses of it over the season. They brought it out for the Wisconsin game. They put it back on the shelf because it hasn't really been a season where we faced another passing attack like this. So that's, if there's a route to winning, that's the route.
Well, so the recent history of this series, you know, you bring in Don Brown, and Don Brown does real well against Ohio State teams with JT Barrett.
Mm-hmm.
And because he's very aggressive, he gets after it in the front, he's spread aware, and he runs a ton of cover one man. And so Ohio State is like, all right, well, this is our meta game. So now we're going to move to this NFL passing attack that absolutely eviscerates Don Brown's defense. And they stuck with that. That's where they are right now. And Michigan has taken an NFL approach to defending a very polished passing game. And we're going to see if they have the athletes to pull that off, the organization to pull it off in year one.
That's the question. That's where it boils down, right? Ravens were doing it with NFL athletes, including three first-rounders in the secondary. Michigan's going to be doing it with Dax Hill, DJ Turner, and Vincent Gray.
Right, and, like, I believe in Dax Hill.
And DJ Turner's been good.
I believe in DJ Turner somewhat, but, you know, the chances that there isn't a Brandon Watson moment where it's just like, oh, this is not athletically doable seem pretty remote, because Michigan is no longer rolling out LeVert Hill and Jordan Lewis and David Long at these spots. Like, their starting quarterbacks are going to be like fringe 4-stars and a 3-star who is going to Mizzou until Michigan flipped him late, right? And you can get away with that in a lot of different situations. And you can get away with it a lot better in this defense than a Don Brown defense. But at some point, you just got to be able to run with guys. And I'm still skeptical that's going to be available. So you confuse Stroud, and then you hope that your defensive ends kill the dude. Because if he gets protection, I can't see it going well.
It will not go well. Stroud is an accurate passer when he has time. He hits guys in stride. You've got to get pressure. And I think the final thing I'll say about the defense, well, two things really, but to Brian's point earlier about the flow of the game, Ohio State scored a touchdown in each of the last two games in their first drive of the game. They went right down and scored both times they got the ball in those two games. So a stop on the first series could be really, really big in terms of just asserting that this is a different kind of game. Secondly, Bill Connolly wrote a little bit about this, but Ohio State's red zone offense is not as good as you would expect given everything else. And a big reason for that is so much of the way you have to approach Ohio State is fearing the 70-yard pass over the top. That goes out the window in the red zone. And
right, and you don't have a mobile quarterback, right?
And so the way every team that's hung with Ohio State, they give up a lot of yards, they give up a lot of long drives, but they get off the field in the red zone. Oregon, I believe, forced 3 turnovers on downs inside their own 40. Penn State forced 3 field goals, including one at like the 2-yard line. that was kind of humorous. And then Nebraska got 2 interceptions off Stroud, forced field goals. You're going to give up 500 yards. It's just a matter if the 500 yards equal 49 points or 30 points. And that's the story of this game.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back, and talk about the less depressing side of the ball.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our 3 convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, UGP is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing down people to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out the order. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
At Peak Wealth, we believe we can help you retire with confidence. It's Nick Hopwood, certified financial planner from
Peak Wealth Management
in Plymouth. I graduated from Michigan in 2001 with an econ degree and founded Peak Wealth Management in 2014. Now we have over $240 million of assets under management. As a freshman in 97, winning the national championship in football and hockey didn't get any better than that. Both my wife and I lived in Bursley that year, and it's crazy because we never actually met while living in the same dorm. Probably because she had a car and I had to ride the bus. But we named our dog Bursley anyway, and he's on the payroll here at Peak Wealth Management. At Peak, we're fee-based. We're your fiduciary, which means everything we recommend is always in your best interest. We partner with leading institutional money managers, focus on low fees, and make sure every client has a financial plan covering retirement, college, tax, estate, insurance, and cash flow. Simply put, we are
Peak Wealth Management,
your comprehensive financial coach. Book your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
TeamFanClub.com asks you to become a team sponsor for your university by financially supporting a men's or women's team at the University of Michigan. Under Name, Image, and Likeness, college athletes can now earn money. Name, Image, and Likeness have athletes chasing money, losing valuable study time for classes, practices, and games. On TeamFanClub.com, sponsors can make it easier for your favorite team and coach with a sponsorship. As a sponsor, you can pay a one-time payment or monthly payment starting at $20. A monthly payment by you of $20 or more will help your school's athletes tremendously. All players share equally, not just the starters. Team Fan Club provides fairness for all athletes who practice and train every day. TeamFanClub.com provides stability for players to stay at your school and not go into the transfer portal. This product makes so much sense. So, go to TeamFanClub.com and sponsor your team today.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, MichiganLawGrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue.
Welcome back to Immigrant Radio 7.11. Now we will discuss the Ohio State defense, which was coached by Kerry Coombs very briefly. That did not go well. So they gave him the Paterno, where they put him up in a box, the headset that's not connected to anything, and they turned to their defensive backs coach, and he went from a cover one scheme to a cover two scheme, and Ohio State got better.
It works. That always works, right? Switching defenses in the middle of the season and throwing a guy no one knows in charge of your defense. What they did is
they're just like, all right, we're just going to play it safe. You know, we don't need to have a dominant defense that busts you up on a down to down basis and gets you going three and out. We can bleed you down the field and you're going to screw up. And then if you kick a field goal, you're dead meat because our offense is going to put up 7 touchdowns in 7 possessions. So,
can you repeat that last part for all the Jim Harbaughs in the room?
So, I mean, they didn't really have to do a whole lot except just kind of back off and let their natural talent kind of figure it out. So, you know, they weren't always going to mess up all their run fits and they weren't always going to have huge busts. And now they're just keeping a couple of guys back and relying on the fact that they play in the Big Ten to keep their offense, I mean, keep their defense kind of moving. And they have a lot of talent on the defensive line, so since the Oregon game, pretty much nobody has been able to run on them, period. Mm-hmm. Now you have Rutgers did it a little, Nebraska did it a little, and those are both teams that are willing to throw their quarterback into the fray in a way that Michigan cannot. So I don't think those are really indicative. And then, you know, Michigan State and Kenneth Walker come to town, and Kenneth Walker gets 7 carries. And that's because Michigan State's down 7-14, yeah. 21-28.
Right. Right, like, okay, let's grind this game away. Oh, my God.
It's basically been that the only – everyone's been out of the game before it starts, pretty much, except for Nebraska and Penn State, and neither of those teams are really rushing teams, right? I mean, Penn State's rushing attack is not what
they're terrible.
You would want. Yeah.
But Nebraska is fairly good, and they
– yeah.
They got up to like 113 yards.
But so. Nebraska was always chasing in that game too. They went down, I think, 17-3 maybe early before they crawled back.
They weren't chasing in the kind of Michigan State way where it's just like, we need 17 touchdowns right now. So,
you guys should have heard George Blaha on the call for that game. It was glorious. He cannot make it seem like the Spartans are losing.
Michigan has had this ground game that everybody was like, oh, this is an amazing ground game. Then, you know, Hassan Haskins gets held to basically 80 yards against Penn State. There's a couple other games which are a little hinky, like the Rutgers game and stuff like that. And I think they got a couple of really good backs, but their offensive line is probably not the rushing unit that we felt it was early in the season, which makes sense. There's no seniors on it, right?
Right.
Stuber's
an old guy. Stuber's in his fifth year. I mean, he's technically not a senior because, like, everybody got COVID year, but I mean, he's He's a fifth-year guy. Hayes is a fourth-year guy, but he was always a project.
Right, he's a guy to stack meat on. But, like,
right.
I'm a little concerned that Michigan's going to try to run the ball a lot against Ohio State, and it's just not going to work well enough to justify doing it, just because it feels so hard for most of the game. And it's like, oh, well, maybe these guys will wear down. But Ohio State's not going to wear down.
I think you can do it just after you establish the pass. I mean, if they come out trying to run, OISU is going to be ready for that, right? That's been the book on Michigan. They want to run the ball. Teams are keying in on it. What Penn State did when they couldn't run it, their running game in that game became screens, especially the wide receivers. They would get first down, boom, screen, six-yard pickup, boom, screen, you know, five. And it was getting chunks every time, and they felt like, we don't even have to try and run the ball when we're getting this. This is our alternative to throwing down the field. And I think if Michigan can target that, then maybe you can run it later. But if you come out trying to run, you know, every play on your first drive, it's going to go terrible.
Right.
It just will.
I think we're assuming that Blake Corum is going to be back for this game. Mm-hmm. So with that and the addition of Donovan Edwards, who set a Harbaugh single season record for receiving yards for running back in one game, that looks like a really promising place to attack, because the linebackers are not a strength of Ohio State. You're going to get a lot of information if you motion your back out of the backfield, and it's going to be man or zone, and you're going to know which one. And Michigan has two guys who are really good in the pass game, and if you can isolate some guys on the sideline, get some screens in there, because like we're talking about wide receiver screens for Penn State. I mean, how much more effective is that if you have an actual running back getting the ball there, like Blake Corum? That could be something where Michigan is able to rack up some yards. And if you look at the stats, whenever Ohio State's gone up against a competent pass offense, they've given up yards, and they've given up yards at a pretty decent clip. So we're talking about 7 and over for virtually anybody with a pulse. And, you know, if Cade McNamara is able to continue performing at the level he kind of hit mid-season, if Michigan's able to hit those running backs, and you know that John O'Korn game plan, we complain constantly about how they never use Chris Evans. They could have won that game if John O'Korn could have hit Chris Evans on any of a number of different shots where he was. So this is something that Michigan has looked at for Ohio State and attacked before. So, you know, I think even Hassan Haskins, when you dump it down to Hassan Haskins in space, he's going to run over the first guy he meets. So those checkdowns to the running backs and just intentionally involving them in the pass game, I think, is going to be an emphasis, and it's one that should be pretty good for Michigan.
Yeah, I like that matchup against linebackers in space over the middle, but also occasionally Ohio State does a thing where they you know, send a linebacker or a DB to rush, and they'll drop their edge players in coverage. And there was one play I saw that Penn State didn't exploit, but like a running back was in space against a 260-pound defensive end. And if you see that at any point, that's something I would look at. And with Edwards and Corum and Haskins, it gives Michigan a lot of opportunities. But I also like the tight ends in this matchup, because the linebackers in coverage were not great in the games I've seen. PFF agrees and their coverage scores for those guys. There's a lot of room over the middle for the tight ends. And that was the thing I was screaming about in the MSU game, is that MSU refuses to use anyone who isn't Jaden Reed, basically, in the passing game. And they have Hunt, their blocking tight end, who they almost never throw to, who was open on almost every play. And they were getting, it was literally the only thing they did well in that game. And there were times where Thorne's forcing it into double coverage against Reed while the tight end's running down the seam uncovered. Like, I like Eric Gall's opportunity here to punish that linebacker level and pick up those 6, 8, 10-yard chunk plays, which I think is how Michigan's going to need to move the ball, because Ohio State's playing two safeties high. They don't want to give up the big play. Michigan doesn't want to get the big play either. You want the 11-play, 8-minute drive, and I think you're going to do that far more effectively by targeting over the middle for 8, 10, 12 yards than you are trying to grind it out on the ground, at least to start, until you can make them have to take more and more guys out of the box.
Yeah, I mean, right. The path for like Michigan, let me go ahead on this real quick.
The Nebraska versus Oklahoma game plan, where there's a total of 8 possessions in the game, mm-hmm. I think is a approach.
I'm saying the same exact thing, that like you want to keep this, because you're going to have, what, one or two really cool things that you're going to mess up CJ Stroud, and maybe that gets them off the field, right? So, like, you want that to be a greater percentage of the drives that Ohio State has. Because if you stretch it out, you kind of let that offense go, they're just going to crack you eventually. And, I mean, it's not just tight ends across the middle, right? Like, a lot of Gattis's passing game sends the receivers rolling across the middle. And, you know, they have a lot. The quote, speed and space thing has mostly just been using the speed of his receivers on routes going across the middle and then clearing them out with guys running option routes above them. So that attacks linebackers a lot more than it attacks defensive backs. And if you are rolling against Michigan, Michigan could have a running game just with a West Coast offense in this one. Like that's where Cade McNamara is best. That's where their receivers have actually done most of their work this year. And, you know, I wouldn't just say it's just the tight ends. Like, that is probably Michigan's game plan with the running back involved as well. Like, those dump-offs, the tight end leaks, and then, like, crossing routes with the receivers. You've seen them use a couple of meshes successfully and then put it away, a couple pick routes and then put them away. I think all that stuff's coming out for this game.
And I think Ohio State's defense isn't unlike Michigan's in that the defensive line and really the edge rushers are the strength of this defense, and it's their version of the sort of trump card that gets you off the field, because I watched two games against Penn State and Michigan State. Neither of those teams have great offensive tackles and pass protection. That's very generous to Penn State. But you look at those games, and when they were able to stop those opposing offenses, it was really coming from dominating at the line of scrimmage. And particularly against Penn State, if Clifford had time to throw, he was finding open receivers all the time. But he didn't have time to throw all that often. And it looked a lot like the Michigan game where Clifford stood in there and delivers 10 yards and gets drilled every time. But he made a lot of heroic throws, but he also made bad decisions and got sacked because they do have good edge rushers. Now, here's the thing. Tyreek Smith and Zach Harrison are very good players. They're not Chase Young. They're not Nick Bosa. They're not Joey Bosa. They're not, you have to double these guys every play because they're going to destroy you otherwise. They're good players, but they can be stopped. And it's a matter of, can Michigan get that to happen, right? I mean, this is a big game for Ryan Hayes to try and redeem himself. And how they approach those guys is interesting to me, too, because Haskell Garrett, I think, is the only defensive tackle they have who really provides any pass rush. So maybe you can double one of those guys with only five blockers, or, you know, double them both and have clean pockets the whole time. I don't really know how they're going to approach it, but Ohio State wants to get pressure. They just don't have the monster that they had every year for like 8 years.
Well, so the other thing is, like, Ohio State has faced so many passes because of their offense.
Yeah.
If you actually go into, they have a ton of sacks this year, but if you go into the like down to down numbers, they're like 56th in sack rate.
Yeah.
So this is kind of a microcosm of the Michigan State pass defense, where they had a lot of sacks, but they faced so many attempts. So their actual pressure rate was overrated. So, and Michigan is, I think, still third in the country at sack rate allowed. So this should be a matchup where Cade McNamara is relatively clean and is able to find guys downfield. Not every snap, but enough. And so if Michigan can win the pressure battle on both sides of the ball, then you get to a point where, like, okay, maybe they can win the game.
Yeah, Michigan's pass protection is based off of Cade makes his first read and gets it to his first read or second read all the time. So,
well, that's part of the whole true because, you know, you've got blitz pickups. I mean, how many missed blitz pickups have we seen this year? Four?
Sure, sure.
Like, they're very organized. They don't really give up anything up the middle. And until they faced Penn State's defensive ends, the tackles were hanging with everybody they were going up against. Now, it's probably going to happen a couple of times in this game, because they're elite, and Michigan does not have elite tackles, but they do have an elite pass protection unit.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, and the pickup will be important, because Ohio State loves to throw those DB blitzes, particularly with what they call their cover safety, who kind of operates like a nickel, lines up with over cornerbacks or over wide receivers a lot, and particularly Lathan Ransom, the backup cover safety, when he's on the field lined up over a wide receiver at the line of scrimmage, he's blitzing most of the time. And they love to bring that guy sort of off the edge to try and surprise the opponents. And it worked against Penn State to some extent, because Penn State just pass protection is a disaster. But Michigan, if they can identify that guy, know where he's coming from, and get the pickup in order, yeah, I like this opportunity to move the ball on this defense, as long as Cade is showing the same accuracy and poise that he's shown in the last month.
Special teams, Ohio State's seventh in the FBI rankings. Michigan is number one by a wide margin now. but they haven't really done a ton. The punt returns, they haven't really done much with. They did block a punt earlier this year. Kicker is 16-17 on the year, and that's where they get most of their efficiency from. He's fourth in the country once you take a distance into account. It's also a transfer from UNC who was 17-27 at UNC, and now he's 16-17 at Ohio State. Just another horseshoe falling out of Ohio State's ass. They don't get a lot of touchbacks. They do cover kickoffs extremely well. So Michigan might have some opportunities to use Quorum there, or if Quorum's not back there, someone else, Henning. And they've only punted 25 times, so who knows?
Yeah, I had Alex usually give me the stats for the guys and give me the average punts, and I'm just leaving it 25 punts. He's punted it 25 times.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back, and talk about something else.
Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, founder and president at Peak Wealth Management. We have a lot in common. We both went to Michigan. We're both huge fans, but I'm concerned about how much time you're spending on Michigan football recruiting. This could be time spent with me poring over your cash flow and Roth conversion strategy. How are these Roth conversions going to get done with you spending all your time and energy on MGoBlog looking at the next five-star recruits? Hey, all kidding aside, if you're addicted to MGoBlog and you want to outsource some of your financial planning to an expert, consider us, peakwm.com/MGoBlog. At Peak, we work with people in a variety of situations. Some of our clients are young professionals looking to optimize their savings and investments. For young people, time is the key. Some of our clients are super affluent trying to figure out when they can retire. Some are high net worth retirees looking for a second opinion on how their money's working for them. Get your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
If you want to see where our post-game podcast happens, or if you need a spot to land in Ann Arbor, check out 4M, Prentice Partners' beautiful brand-new flagship property at 830 Henry Street in Lower Burns Park and across the bridge from the Big House. Their 11 spacious 6-bedroom, 6-bath suites feature state-of-the-art digital capabilities and are laid out for comfortable, efficient collaboration. You can also rent a 4M unit for shorter stays, say if you want to come to town for a football weekend. I want to add myself that they're also taking over Lucky's. We're really excited about their plans for that space. So if you're by the stadium, swing by 830 Henry or visit Prentice4M.com.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up. You can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734 734-
734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Back to Embargo Radio 7.11. We now move on to what we learned from the Maryland game. Is there anything?
I mean, they didn't have a whole lot of offensive snaps, but I mean, the receivers are kind of just all rounding into form at this point. Like, we've had so many games this year where it's like, oh, there's, you know, there's Johnson, and okay, there's the Henning game, and there's the game where, you know, Roman Wilson busts out. In this game, kind of like everybody was putting it together. Even Daylon Baldwin, who, of all the many reviews in this game that weren't made, I was kind of maddest about his, because it was just a really good catch they plucked off the ground and, like, nobody looks at, and he's, like, going back to the huddle being like, what? Wait, what? What? I made that catch. And Daylon, we're just moving on. So, I mean, the receivers all look pretty good. Cade looked pretty Cade-like. And then offensively, obviously, Edwards was the story, right?
Right. So, I mean, is there anything to learn from the offensive line in this game, or?
Not really. Yeah, that was the offensive line, because, like, it was not enough snaps to get a whole lot of things going. I mean, Hayes was fine again. He was not going against Penn State's monsters, and he was great. And then, like, a lot of things they did were just like, okay, Maryland is telling us exactly what they're doing. Alex Goodscout once again. they kept on bringing five, and like Michigan was like, okay, well, we've been Don Brown, so we're going to Don Brown you. And they matched up Edwards against their linebacker, who would go through a ton of traffic, and that kind of did the trick. You know, solid RPS number for one, so people are off my back for a second about that. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot we can learn offensively from this game against All right. Ohio State.
Other side of the ball, I mean, that is an accomplished passing attack. They shut down Rakeem Jarrett.
Yep.
And I think two catches. It's kind of sacrificed, I think, some ability on the ground because Maryland was able to move the ball fairly successfully that way, and that's not something that they traditionally do.
We're going to Don Brown you, and they matched up Edwards against
That looks like Dooley was joining us a little early. Defensively, The tackles were, like, they held up against a line that, you know, is not going to be Ohio State's. Hutchinson destroyed again. Colson was really, like, the big disappointment. All year, I think what they've done is they've flopped him and Ross whenever the offense changes the strength of the, like, so the tight end goes across. They'll have Colson switch with Ross so that Ross is always got that role. This game and last game, they really just let Colson stay in there and play middle linebacker if that switched. That has not gone well. Ross has a hard job in this defense, and when you put it on a freshman, he's tentative, he gets in the wrong gap, he gave up a big stretch play, and it's just like, I mean, this is not what you want to see right before Ohio State from your middle linebackers. Ross also still has some coverage issues, and, like, you know, we were talking earlier about Ohio State's linebackers and how they're exploitable, but I'm sure Ohio State has noticed that Michigan's linebackers are, I wouldn't say, like, glaring weakness, but, you know, Colson is definitely got his best football way ahead of him, and Ross is who he is at this point. Only other things, they played a lot more of their kind of switching zones and tried to double guys. I think they were just practicing a little bit more for Ohio State. We saw that break down a couple times. There was one play where I just could not figure out whose job it was to be on top of this guy. It probably would, I guess Turner, it might have been Moten, really screwed it up. But, like, the closest thing I could find to, like, somebody not completely blowing a coverage was Turner having to, like, turn into the free safety. So Michigan has some weird coverages, and then again, not a whole lot of applicability to Ohio State, just because Maryland is a very specific type of team. And again, Alex, good scout. You know, Tata likes to get out there and break the pocket right away. And, you know, Big Ten road game, Ojabo got held. That was actually the other major concerns, that, you know, holding's going to happen, right? And it's not like major holds. I'm not talking about, like, you know, big grappling and just, like, you know, the guy's hands are on the outside of your jersey and wrenching you around. And Hutchinson's been able to fight through that most of the year. Ojabo is not. And now I think that's the book on him, that if, you know, unless they're going to be calling it the way they call it in the NFL these days, you're probably going to be able to shut down Ojabo that way, which could really change the outlook for the Ohio State game.
All right. Well, let's take a break. Come back with Greg Dooley.
The only thing we can be sure of about the future is that it will be absolutely fantastic. I'm thinking of the incredible breakthrough made possible by developments in communications.
Arthur C. Clarke's 1964 vision is now reality with SignalWire, a cloud platform that enables developers to build the applications that will reshape the future of communications.
These things will make possible a world in which we can be in instant contact with each other wherever we may be.
You can add cutting-edge, real-time video and audio to any product, website, or application with APIs and SDKs for developers of all skill sets. SignalWire is optimized for high quality and low latency communication functionality for video, voice, and text messaging capabilities.
Almost any skill could be made independent of distance. Men will no longer commute. They will communicate.
See for yourself at SignalWire.com. Use code 2021 and receive $25 in developer credit. Go to SignalWire.com.
SignalWire Communications OGs, original geeks of programmable communication.
This is Matt Demarest, the owner of HomeSure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use HomeSure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our company. Complicated loan. Brian used them. You should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com. That's HomeSure lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, UGP is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing down people to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out the order. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Hey, so I have, like, insurance and stuff, but I don't really, like, know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks, and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy, his name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He okay. looked at my insurance, and he was like, yeah, your coverage sucks, and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it.
I also, like, I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games. Well, and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually, like, reads MGO Blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those, too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together, and you will save money on your insurance, and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life, too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 7.11, we'd like to thank SignalWire, which is the vehicle via which this podcast reaches your ears. So check it out if you need a Zoom alternative that's got more features and better audio. We'd like to welcome in Greg Dooley right now of mvictors.com. How you doing, Greg?
Great. Brian, we've been at this blog game for a long time. We're like salty blog veterans, I feel like. Old guard.
Start singing some sea shanties.
Right. Pretty much. Pretty much. I'm doing all right. I told Seth earlier, I can't control the game, certainly, but I can control the lead up to the game. And I want to win my Twitter. I want to win my pregame at the game on Saturday. I want to win everything I can win. I want to be at MGo Blog Radio. I want to do everything I can do and just soak up this week. That's kind of my goal right now. And enjoy as much of it as I can because I don't know what's going to happen at noon.
Michigan does tend to win like the Twitter part of this rivalry quite handily.
It's like the blood battle. We went, yeah.
Other than the football, Mrs. Lincoln, we're doing great.
We do amazing in fundraising, blood donations. We're much better at finding M's on things that they missed with the little red X's. They seem to screw that up.
It's funny that their thing becomes like changing letters. We're like, copy editing, that's our thing.
Right. So those are things we can control, and I think we do a good job at it. Space, we're good at, you know, things like that. So I'm trying to do my part this week with my little videos. And, of course, I'm sending out like little clips of, you know, the banner stuff that went on in the 70s and all that. And the common comeback is, yeah, that's all that old footage. That's all you got. And I'm kind of like, well, that's kind of what I do.
I am the history
that's
guy.
That's new footage for me. So
they're replying to the Bentley Library the same way. Like, oh, living in the past, I see.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I don't think it's really fair to compare Michigan and Ohio State Twitters because, I mean, how many times can you get a variation on "you are gay"? Like the height of comedy. I basically block every Ohio State fan who messages me because I don't have time to read your incoherent narratives about vaccines and why the Illuminati. Trying to control our brains. Buddy, you don't have a brain worth controlling. Nobody is trying to figure out all the ICP lyrics. There's rap genius for that. Nobody needs to know all of the different ways in which you can crash a car.
Right.
So.
And of course, we do have some like tantalizing little actual historical things that are complete actual burns on them, like the Script Ohio, like dedicating their stadium after they beat us 3 years in a row when we were their guests to dedicate their stadium. There is some real, you know, actual stuff there. So
yeah, you called me out recently.
Increasingly far back in the past.
Right.
Get it.
I mean, right. Michigan, we've been talking about this before, Dooley, that Michigan's had like a lot of different rivals before they settled on Ohio State. And I mean, all the way up until the time when people alive today remember when Michigan's rival was like Minnesota or Michigan State. And Ohio, like, they started in a small Ohio league. They just destroyed everybody they played. And then they moved up to the Big Ten, and we weren't there. And, like,
yep.
their focus was always on, like, Michigan. Like, that's who we want to play.
Absolutely. And, you know, their first win, and they're even their first tie, I think, against us. You know, they sounded every whistle and horn and bell in the town in Columbus to celebrate. It's always been a big deal to them, and we tend to focus on Michigan State entering the Big Ten and all that stuff that went down in the 50s, but it's kind of a pretty big deal. We were not in the Big Ten. You know, they snuck in. Was it 1912 or 1913? They got in. We made it 10. And changed the nickname from the Big Nine to the Big Ten, which is something we share. And they've always been on. But even back then, no one would really consider Ohio State our rival. And I don't think it really happened until the 60s, even the late 60s. I've done so much. I've talked to many of the 64 players just because of that great season Bump Elliott's Rose Bowl team. And many of them told me, like, no, we needed to beat State. And for good reason. State was really good. I think that's all changed. You could argue it's getting closer now with D'Antonio's success and, of course, the last 2 years in who's our biggest rival. But to me, it's still unquestionably Ohio State. But that, it's evolved. And I think you could even throw Penn in there when we were out of the Big Ten in that period as our biggest rival. But unquestionably before that, it was Amos Alonzo Stagg, whose, of course, name adorns the Big Ten champion trophy, which we'd like to see one day and play for. It was absolutely Chicago in the latter part of the 19th century and early 20th when Yost came to town.
Yeah, and keep in mind, Michigan never played Ohio State at the end of the season until we rejoined the Big Ten in 1918. And then, even then, the only reason it was the last game of the year is because there was a pandemic, and they canceled all these games, and then, like, that one got replayed. So, like, that was just rescheduled to the end of the season, and that's why Michigan-Ohio State started playing at the end of the year. So I don't think it was – I think you're right, until, like, the 1960s, really right up until – right up before Bo was when that rivalry becomes, like, the rivalry for Michigan, and Michigan becomes partly defined by this rivalry with Ohio State. It certainly wasn't the game at that point, yeah.
I think so. Well, I mean, we had Minnesota just pounding us, knocking us around in the middle 30s to the early 40s, even with Harmon. Hard to ignore. And we played for a trophy, of course, the Jug. And then you had the great state teams in our own backyard that we had to contend with Duffy Doherty and Biggie Munn. Amazing. So anyway, but here we are. And there's no question, you know. But, you know, we were talking earlier, the way I look at it, is for me, and I'm someone who grew up in the state of Michigan, right, and still live here, it hurts me more when we lose to State because we're supposed to beat them. And frankly, I hear about it more. It feels better to beat Ohio State. That's how I distinguish the two rivalries. To me, it is personal because it really depends on your family members, where you work, what your life is. Like, how much do you hear from these other fans? I want to beat Ohio State more than I want to beat Michigan State, okay? But it definitely hurts more when we lose, for a lot of reasons for me, when we lose to Michigan.
Right. Well, I mean, we can all justify Ohio State, like the system in place and the fact that they go to the playoffs and we don't, and that means they get to have this unending string of blue chips and five stars and what, and we don't, and like it's I mean, the system is kind of set up to make sure that if you're in the top four, you're going to be very different from number five. And I think that there's a generational gap that's just gotten wider between people who remember Michigan perennially a top five team and those of us who kind of grew up with Michigan, you know, knocking on the door or looking like a preseason and not really kind of being that at the end, and then finally just not having the same horses as the other guys because so much talent now has shifted to like the top three or four teams. It's kind of made us the little brother, I think. Like we're dead focused on this, and like to a degree, Ohio State can be like, okay, we're gonna play Michigan, but they still are the ones with that mentality where like everything for them is about hate. Like you go and read Ramsey's column on 11 Warriors this year, and it's the same column he wrote in 2019, which is, you know, I hate Michigan so much, if we would ever lose them again, it would hurt me. Like, they've run out of things to say, because there's no room when you win, like, hate doesn't give you anything, right? Like, you hate, and you hate, and you hate, and then, like, you know, and then you actually get to destroy the person you hate, you don't get anything for that. So all Ohio State can do is lose. They can't win anything for this rivalry anymore. There's no happy Ohio State fans anymore. Their players are because they come through the program, but like, they're like a miserable franchise getting more and more good things coming their way.
Yeah,
I would trade situations with them.
Of course. No, of course. I'm just. My point is that like the psychology doesn't change no matter where you're sitting. Everyone's perpetually disappointed. Maybe make Michigan fans feel a little bit better to know that like there's, they're just terrified. There's no like, Ohio State's not coming into this going like, you know, oh, if we lose to Michigan, then it's a good fight. Like, it's either few or it's over.
Their band constantly does an incredible, you know, thing. It always ends up with Michigan in a dumpster fire or a trash can or something on the field, all their formations. But they do that in week three. It's all about Michigan for them. And you're right, it never lets up.
All right, why don't we wrap this up, because it's getting a little justification-y.
Okay.
I will say, I think it is cool with their gold pants tradition, what they do with the players, where they give them the gold pants. And that started in 1934, right, when their coach, we had won back-to-back national championships, and their coach said, hey, they put their pants on one leg at a time, and they came up with this notion of giving each of the players gold pants. Of course, I argue 1934 is our worst season. The only game we won, of course, was the Georgia Tech Willis Ward game, which continues to be a black cloud on our legacy. And it introduced the gold pants thing. But again, it is a cool thing we share. And of course, the other thing we share, again, right or wrong, is the whole legacy of Woody Hayes and Butch Schembechler and the 10-year war. And that all came out of the 1950 Snow Bowl, right, where Wes Bezwar, the Ohio State coach, was fired after that wild game. Woody came in, and then Bob's your uncle, and here we are with this rivalry. Yeah. All right.
One day, Boris was visited by demons in his head. And they said, bring me Ruski vodka, or your son may soon be dead.